BBC Radio Scotland.
I love anything to do with the sea, yachting, sailing, scuba diving, water skiing.
Hello, my name is Joe Clifford, and I want to introduce you to some very different people.
I'm a geek at heart.
I like my walking.
I tend to be organised.
My favourite colour is orange.
I'm heavily involved in a classic car club.
Ordinary people, just getting on with ordinary lives.
Obsessed with Harley Quinn from Batman.
And I've been to Australia.
I have a cat. He is awesome.
Opera, theatre, poetry, writing.
But we all share one thing in common.
I suppose when I was about four or five.
Four or five.
Probably about four.
I was four too.
I realised I seemed to behave and feel different from the other girls at school.
And at 15, I went to my dad dressed in my mum's clothes and I put my hands out and asked him for help.
I just thought I was a regular kid, really, until adults pointed out that I was not a boy.
I looked in the mirror and didn't really recognise the boy I saw there. For like everyone you're going to hear in this programme, I'm transgender. And this is the story of our transgender lives. We've always been around. We turn up all over the Bible. The prophet Daniel was a eunuch. Philip the Apostle baptized one of us in the desert in the earliest days of Christianity. We are known to exist in almost every society in the world. But whereas other cultures recognize us, in this society, we are made to feel ashamed and we hide. This is James Morton.
I know, certainly when I look back at my teenage years and I think, gosh, people knew something was wrong, but because I was scared to tell them, I thought if I say I feel male, that's just good. They're just going to go, gosh, they're even more screwed up than we thought. So I was too scared to say, and people, it just never occurred to people that that might be the issue.
James and I met many years ago when I was an apparently ordinary dad, as we remembered in our interview. When I lived in Roslyn, my daughter had two very good friends. One of them was a very pretty but very unhappy girl, and we never really knew why she was unhappy. And then years later, when I was in the first stages of transitioning, we met in the health centre in a workshop. And I went, of course, that was what was wrong. That was what was happening.
I know, I never realised that you were going to be trans either. When you think about how small that little glen was, and there was only sort of about 15 houses, I still kind of have to pinch myself that sort of there was two trans people living so close by and neither of us knew the other was there.
James is now the manager of the Scottish Transgender Alliance, a charity partly funded by the Scottish Government, which works to protect the rights of transgender and intersex people in Scotland. But it's not always easy to find the community they're working to protect, as James explains.
Well, because people have historically been scared to tell other people they're trans, it's been very difficult to count accurately, and it's still quite difficult to count accurately. And you can only really count the people who've permanently changed their name and gender on documents and things like that. All those other people who know they're trans but express their gender identity in more informal social situations and don't take that step of permanently changing everything, you can't really count them easily. You can just say, well, for each person who takes that step, who's in contact with a trans organisation, there's several others who haven't taken that step of changing their name. In terms of the number of people that you can kind of more formally count, there's over 1,500 people in Scotland who are now living permanently in a different gender.
It is possible for us now to live openly, but in the past our lives have been difficult and precarious.
Before there was protection from discrimination, the risk was that you would lose everything. And if you went to the gender specialist even, they would often tell you, well, you're going to have to leave your partner, you're going to have to move away from where everybody knows you, you have to hide your past, and if anybody finds out that you have undergone gender reassignment, you can expect to be run out of town and lose your job. And so people were going, gosh, I know who I am, I know who I want to tell other people I am, but I don't want to lose absolutely everything.
And that's why so many of us have had to keep ourselves secret for so long.
I don't have much memories of my very young childhood, but I know that 1969, I said, I'm in the wrong body. What's wrong? This is all wrong. And that was scary. But again, pre-transition, it was a case of hiding.
This is Alice Brown, a businesswoman.
An IT consultant and complementary therapist.
She lives and works in the Highlands, is a respected member of the community, and convenes a support group for other trans people. But she had to go through a lot of suffering to live her open, happy life. Because at some stage, hiding becomes unbearable, and we have to come out and face the world. And that is so frightening, because we know we're going to upset those we love. And know, too, that they have the capacity to hurt us.
If only I could stop one heart from breaking, I would not have lived in vain if I could.
I was actually very scared that I was going to lose my wife. We actually did marriage counselling, and she said to me, after coming out of it, you're killing the person I used to know.
I do most unspeakable things.
I know that feeling, because me and my wife went through exactly the same experience. And then you have to tell the family.
We actually drove over to my mum and dad's. In fact, I believe that my wife actually drove over because I was in such a nervous condition. My hands were shaking. It's the most nerve-wracking and stressful thing I have ever had to do in my life. And I was grateful that my wife actually told my parents that this is who I was and who I was going to be. I thought my dad was going to have a cardiac arrest. My mother was absolutely livid.
And not just the immediate family.
We came out to my wife's family via a phone call. When she talked to her sister, the sister basically said, you got a choice, us or it. It referring to me. And she said, basically, if I have to choose, I'll choose her.
I know I can stop one heart from breaking.
To have that support from my wife was the best thing ever.
It can be so difficult for everybody, and even the best-intentioned families can find this hard to deal with. But over time, even the most hurtful situations can change for the better.
Despite the family, my wife's family, having real issues with me, they all turned up for our 25th wedding anniversary. And that was nice. And they had to accept that it was Alice and her wife were celebrating their 25th wedding anniversary.
Now that people are seeing, well, actually, I've seen on television or I've met online somebody who's taken this step and actually they've managed to keep their partner, they managed to keep their job, they're living in the same town or village, and people maybe found it a bit strange at first, but actually it's not going too badly. There's only a few folk who are giving them hassle, and people have that increased confidence and think, actually, if they can do it, maybe I can do it too.
Jan Irvin still lives in the same old mining town she grew up in. When she first came out, she faced the most horrendous hostility.
Way back in the days, there was three different ways they treated you. One was to give you electric shock therapy. One was to treat you as if you were schizophrenic. And the other one was just to lock you up and throw the key away.
And if the fear of that wasn't bad enough, when she came out the second time, as a grown woman, she also had to contend with the media. I remember having to deal with a whole load of headlines not so long ago, describing me as a sex swap playwright. And that was hurtful enough. Jan's experience was far, far worse. She was working as a traffic warden when, one day,
I was walking along the street, and all of a sudden, this reporter appeared and flashed his press card and just said that he knew who I was and that I'd be better speaking to him, because if I didn't speak to him, they would just make it up. And out the corner of my eye, there was a photographer with a long lens. At that time, I felt my knees just collapsing underneath me. I knew eventually it could happen, but when it does happen, it's like getting punched in the stomach.
The story didn't come out right away. The press had other things to think about.
And I think it was the first Iraqi war or whatever, and it wasn't in the papers for weeks till one night I came in on a Wednesday, and I just got a call to say, oh, by the way, you'll be in the Daily Record tomorrow. And I'll never forget the sergeant, so nice, he says, I take it you'll not be coming into work tomorrow. And I goes, sorry? And he goes, I take it you'll not be coming into work. And I goes, oh, Sarge, I'm coming in. And that day, the Thursday, like, the sell out of Daily Records locally, they got deliveries, and I was going along the street and people were pointing at me. But I was like a horse with blinkers on. I was there to do a job.
Things aren't quite so dramatically dreadful these days, but many trans people still face immense hostility just for living their daily lives.
Hello, and welcome to my vlog. I'm Amy. I'm a 23-year-old trans girl living in Scotland. I want to do this vlog mostly to be able to vent, because I think it could help me out a lot.
Amy is a drama student in Fife College. She's had a big struggle to get there.
I think a lot of it's misunderstanding. Like, there was a point where I was getting abuse yelled at me in almost every street I went down. I've had stuff thrown at me, but when I first sort of started, when I went into, like, Savasdas and stuff, the public would, like, people would just generally look at me like I was some sort of sex offender or something. Parents would move their kids out of the way of me and stuff as if, you know, I was some sort of monster.
James Morton again.
It's incredibly stressful, and particularly if you do experience discrimination or hate crime or family rejection, just like anything that's stressful in your life, it creates a greater risk of depression and anxiety. Some sort of idiot on the street shouts out something rude and it just crushes you that day. And if you're already feeling vulnerable, then that idiot across the street threatening you or yelling, like, is that a man or a woman, just makes you want to crawl away and never come out of your house again.
I remember this. It so often happened to me. It's hard at whatever age you suffer it, but it's particularly serious for young people. The strain of having to hide who you are, being abused when you come out, being cruelly bullied at school, all this can really damage a student's academic performance and make it hard for them to fulfill their potential. but Amy has won through. This is what her first day at college was like.
It was scary. Left the flat. I pretty much kept my head down the whole way. I didn't look at anybody, just kept my head down, went straight to college. But then when I got to college and everyone treated me really, really great at college, by lunchtime I was walking about normally. I didn't really notice that there's people outside and stuff. So, yeah, it was... So at that point it was good because I didn't even notice that I was, like, walking about and not really, you know, keeping my head down.
Hello, YouTube. It's been a while, but I'm back and I'm alive and I'm here. And I'm wearing my cool Doctor Who shirt that I found. And I put purple in my hair. Fabulous. Anyway, I'm a lot more outgoing now. I don't know if you can tell. You
With the help of her friends, Amy is now able to be out in the world and even has her own YouTube channel.
Originally, it was a channel that I'd started just at the start of my transition, just before I went into college, so I wasn't comfortable dressing outside and stuff. The first videos are of me at the computer, the first sort of times I'm willing to come out to people, like the world, just inside like the living room with a computer. And originally it was just to track my progress through my transition and from just dressing in the house to what it is now, where I'm undergoing hormones. It was more for the hormone development, if anything, but it took so long to get to the hormone development that the majority of it is just me rattling on about stuff. But over time, it became more of a thing to raise awareness and help other transgender people, as well as educate people who don't know much about it.
A couple of months ago, I went to the GP for something totally unrelated, but because I was wearing a binder, it got in the way, and the GP asked me, "And why are you wearing a binder?" When my notes were sitting right in front of her, she hadn't bothered to check. And she seemed to not know anything about what being trans is.
Logan is a young man living in Edinburgh, and like many trans men, wears a binder to flatten his chest while he is waiting for surgery.
Medically, I'm very early on. I'm pre-everything. I've not been told a great deal about the process for chest surgery. All I know is that it's down in Manchester and there's a waiting list. Most of the stuff that I do know is through talking to other trans people and looking stuff up, really.
At the moment in Scotland, it is possible to get NHS gender reassignment services, but the capacity is still very low. The amount of money that gets invested in that is tiny. There's massively long waiting lists just to be seen for the first time by a gender identity clinic. People are waiting over a year just for that first discussion about what they might need. And when you've struggled for many years already and you've reached that point of crisis of finally going, I can't take this any longer, I have to come out, I have to be myself, to then go on a waiting list for a year before you can talk to anybody about that is really, really damaging to people.
When I started inquiring about being seen by the gender clinic, I was told that for your first assessment, you have a 12-month wait. So knowing that was horrible. I didn't have any sense of time. I was just waiting and I didn't know when it would end. I suppose it's kind of like a dog or a cat who's waiting for their owner and they don't know when their owner's going to come back, so it feels like they're never going to come back. It's the way I see it.
It's really important that we get a little bit more capacity in the gender identity clinics. We're really talking about like maybe one more member of staff. It's not going to be some kind of massive service. It just needs like kind of a few more appointments so that people can get dealt with more quickly.
But healthcare for trans people is about more than gender reassignment, because we face the same problems that everyone does. especially as we get older.
I'm Nikki. I'm a 71-year-old transgender person. I was born in 1944, so I was a war baby.
Nikki has faced extraordinary challenges in his long life. He grew up, as I did, in a time when no one knew what being transgender was, before the word was even in common use. And now, with his health declining, he faces an uncertain future.
Well, for anyone growing old, it can be a real challenge and problem. And, of course, being trans, that's just an extra problem. Because if you've been on, for instance, if you've been on hormones a lot of your life, if you had any surgery, they can affect you. The way people might try and care for you, or they might not even have considered trans people getting older.
For a while, my mother-in-law was living alone, and different carers were coming in to take care of her 3 or 4 times a day, coming in to wash and dress her, undress her and prepare her for bed. A different person each time. It was hard for her. And I wondered what it would be like for me with my very different body, having to come out again and again, 3 or 4 times a day. Would the carers be trained to deal with this sensitively? Would they laugh at me? Would they gossip about me? Would they treat me as a freak? These things concern Nikki too, as do worries about his mental health.
If I do get dementia, I hope that can be addressed by people who know me. It's known fact that people with dementia or Alzheimer's very often revert back to their childhood. So in my case, I might sometimes feel I'm a girl again, perhaps, or talk about living as a girl, as being small. And obviously that could be embarrassing for myself and other people if they don't recognise it, or if it's not handled well. Then if I'm living with other people or in a ward or somewhere, obviously that could cause confusion, embarrassment all around. But one would expect to have respect for those issues. But the more I sort of think about or do research into it and read things on the media, the more I realise I probably haven't thought of a lot of things even now.
There is so much none of us have even begun to think of. But as so many of us gain the confidence to become ourselves, we are beginning to give others the help we didn't have. This is what Jan is doing.
What I do now is, every now and again, I go to Edinburgh College and I will speak to the students about being transgendered. And it's surprising how some of them, they'll come up at the end and they'll say, oh, I didn't even have an inkling to that. One of the main people I talk to is the beauty therapists and the hairdressers, because they will come across transgender people. So the idea is to speak to them, get to meet me, they can speak to me, they ask me questions. I'm really open, so that when somebody walks in and they look different, that they're not like a rabbit in the headlights. You know what I mean? And just look at them and talk about ordinary things. That because at the end of the day, I lead an ordinary life. Unusual, but I lead an ordinary life.
I'm completely blown over sometimes when I meet, see or hear, and on the media too, the young people who are non-binary don't worry so much whether sort of female, male, or nothing, or everything. And that's really positive. And so some of them are quite open about it and seem to have get on quite well. Others, of course, they will have transphobia at school, whatever. But it's all quite promising. And so I'm hoping it's all heading the right way, that if these young people have confidence, it's probably oldies like me who probably have less confidence.
Confidence is the key to improving all our lives. And it's really not that difficult to find. It's just a matter of a little bit of understanding, a little bit of kindness, and all of us being open to each other.
Well, once you're done at the end of it all and have everything sort of sorted, does it sort of get better in the way that the public address you, or like do defences and stuff get better to deal with like transphobic stuff? Generally, just...
I would say yes, it does get better. As soon as I had, because like you, I used to get a lot of people yelling abuse at me, and I used to get very frightened before going out into the street. It was very tough because you never knew what people were going to say. And the strange thing was that after I'd had my tiny bit of surgery, that stopped. I remember I was in France and I was on a bicycle. I wasn't wearing any makeup. I wasn't dressed particularly in a female way. I was just on a bike and I went past a lady in her doing her garden. And I felt very happy. It was a beautiful day. And she looked up at me and she said, "Bonjour, madame." And I went, "Wow, something amazing has happened." So yes, changes do come. And just like you've discovered that your face is changing in ways that you're not aware of, so little by little, the fear goes away. And I don't think twice about it now. I go everywhere and I'm traveling all over the world. I've been in Brazil, I've been in Japan, I've been in Eastern Europe. And nobody thinks twice about it because I'm so much happier in my own skin. And that's what makes a difference.
Wow.
It's very important you know that, because life is going to change for you in ways at the moment that you can't even imagine.
For details of organisations which offer advice and support, go online to bbc.co.uk/actionline or call the BBC Action Line to hear recorded information on 0800 099 099. Lines are open 24 hours and are free from most landlines. Some networks and mobile operators will charge for these calls.
To 95 FM, 810 medium wave, and on digital radio, BBC Radio Scotland.
With the news at 2 o'clock, I'm Amanda Mutulo. On the election trail, the argument over austerity and whether some